First case is 05-2299 and 2302, Cleveland Mobile Radio Sales, Inc. versus Verizon. Mr. Wallach.
Good morning. Mark Wallach, Calfee Halter and Griswold in Cleveland, Ohio, representing Ameritech Mobile Radio Sales. And I'm going to ask to split my argument, reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal, which will be handled by Mr. Gassaway, representing Verizon.
Okay, you know when the red light comes on, that means you've used your 6 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're 9 minutes, rather.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
9 minutes you have, right?
Yes, sir. Thank you. In 1984, this court stated the longstanding law of Ohio in the case of French v. Dwiggins. A statute which imposes treble damages as a penalty for misconduct is obviously intended to prevent or discourage such activity. Until the decision of the Court of Appeals below, no Ohio court has ever presumed to challenge that unbroken line of Ohio case law summarized by that passage from French v. Dwiggins. A statute which imposes treble damages necessarily does so to impose a penalty for misconduct.
Is that what the case said?
That's precisely what the case said, Your Honor. And in fact, this court has said the same thing on several occasions.
That treble damages are a penalty.
That's correct. And in fact, no Ohio case has ever said to the contrary until the Court of Appeals decision below. A statute which imposes treble damages necessarily does so to impose a penalty for misconduct with the overriding purpose and intent of discouraging or preventing such activity. That has always been the law of Ohio, and that continues to be the law of Ohio.
But the case that you cited,
yes.
What you read, you didn't call it a penalty. You said it was to discourage.
It says, the quote is precisely this, Your Honor, a statute which imposes treble damages as a penalty for misconduct. And that's also what this court said in the Osai decision and in the Purolator case. Every time this court has referred to treble damages, it has referred to them as a penalty. In addition, most courts of appeals, which have discussed the subject, including the Usternall case, the only prior case on construing this statute, have all reached the same conclusion.
Treble damages are a penalty. Is punitive damages a penalty?
Your Honor, this court has held on a number of occasions that merely the availability of the remedy of punitive damages does not make the statute into a statute for a penalty.
But punitive is all about penalty, is it not?
But the statute that authorizes the possible award but doesn't require the award of punitive damages is not a statute for a penalty, and that's precisely the question that the statute of limitations raises, is whether the statute is one for a penalty. And every time this court and most of the courts of appeals in Ohio have considered it, they've said treble damages,
which requires a penalty. Let me ask you this. What is the nature of the action that was filed in the common pleas court in Cuyahoga County?
In this case?
Yes.
Actually, there are two cases, Your Honor.
Right. What's the nature of the action?
These are actions for treble damages.
For damages.
Your Honor, the statute itself says that what will be awarded to the plaintiff is not the damages suffered. The words of the statute are precisely three times the amount of damages.
But what does the plaintiff have to prove?
The plaintiff has to prove that they were injured by an action found by the Public Utilities Commission to have violated a statute or regulation of the public utilities laws. And that if they have been show that they've been injured as a result of that, they're entitled to—
They have to prove damages.
They have to prove they've been damaged.
You can't get trouble until you prove your damages.
That's absolutely true, Your Honor.
Right. And the—
That's the multiplicand in the equation.
And you can't even get into court against the utility company until the Public Utilities Commission has made a finding. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
All right. And if that finding is under appeal, can you get into court?
Well, Your Honor, in the underlying Cellnet case, which this court may recall, filed by the same counsel, They filed their action in Common Pleas Court the same day that the Public Utilities Commission ruled, and their case went forward. So I think the answer is absolutely, as soon as the Public Utilities Commission issues an order, it has always been the law of Ohio, it is the law of the Public Utilities Commission, that when the commission issues an order, it is effective, and it can be appealed from. It can also be used as the basis under this court's ruling in the Milligan case to commence a damage action. I say that in that case, the plaintiff's attorneys didn't need a 6-year statute of limitations. They didn't need a 1-year statute of limitations. They could have done with a 1-week statute of limitations and done quite well. They filed the same day. And there's a reason, Your Honor, there's a reason why this is only the second time that this question of proper statute of limitations applicable to 490561 has ever gotten to this court, the first time being when the plaintiffs in Eusternall appealed to this court and were refused jurisdiction. And the reason why this case never arises, except in very unusual circumstances, is that the plaintiffs, in most cases that lead to 490561 actions, have prosecuted the claim through the Public Utilities Commission. The Public Utilities Commission order is public and notorious,
okay, but
and they file immediately. The
Mr.
only
Wallach,
plaintiffs who don't.
The appellate court relied heavily on the Rosette case that our court has come out.
That's true,
What is your view with respect to the application of that case to the circumstances presented here? Would you comment on that?
I certainly would, Your Honor. The Rosette case spoke to a completely different subject, does not control in this case, and the Court of Appeals most seriously misled in believing that Rosette established a magic words test that was now the law of Ohio. Rosette did not claim to overrule, criticize, or limit any prior decision of this court. And all that the Rosette case cleared up of some of the perhaps confusing rhetoric in that decision, all that the Rosette decision said is that when the legislature says we assign a fixed amount of damages for a violation of a statute, and we call it damages, that the court will accept that designation that is damages and not a penalty.
Did Rosette involve treble damage?
It did not. It involved, really, Your Honor, liquidated damages, estimated damages.
Is that a material difference that we should consider or not?
It is all the difference in the world, and you certainly should consider it. And in fact, I believe that this case provides this court with a good opportunity to explain what Rosette did and didn't mean.
Well, there's some discussion about adoption of the Huntington test. Can you comment about that?
Yes. The Huntington test is really not was not even designed to answer this question. The Huntington test was designed in federal jurisprudence to decide whether states had to give credit to decisions of other states. It's really not appropriate here. The fixed rule that this court has always followed and that Ohio courts have always followed is the treble damages are a penalty. That's a flat rule that's always been in effect. There are a number of rules that the court could develop or could decide to adopt to decide whether a particular statute is a statute for a penalty, but this court has never done so.
Counsel, can you cite us one case? We have treble damages, don't we, in Lemon Law? We have it in the Consumer Sales Practices Law. Mm-hmm. Can you cite me one case that says you have to bring those actions in a year?
Your Honor, I'm glad you mentioned the Consumer Sales Practices Act because it's a particularly apt parallel. The Consumer Sales Practices Act specifies two different statutes of limitations. It's a very unusual statute. Statute of limitations one is based on the date of the occurrence of the action that creates alleged liability. That statute of limitations is 2 years. Statute of limitations number two comes into effect if the Attorney General's office has taken any action in the case. And if they have, from the date of the last action by the Attorney General's office, the statute of limitations is 1 year. The legislature has made it clear that
so
when there is public action.
That has a specific
it does,
spelled
and,
out.
And it's made it clear that when there's public specific action like that, it triggers a 1 year statute
what about
of limitations.
What about the Lemon Law?
I'm not familiar with what the statute of limitations is on that, Your Honor. I'm sorry. But in fact, on a number of occasions, this court has commented about treble damages in various contexts.
Well,
and it has always said the same thing. It's a penalty. It's hard to see how it could be anything other than a penalty when the statute requires that the plaintiff recover 3 times actual damages. And it's obvious, and this court has stated many times, that the purpose of treble damages is to deter conduct. That's why treble damages are placed into a statute, and that's true across the board. It's not there to provide windfalls to plaintiffs. This is part of 49, Chapter 4905. That's the section of the revised code that involves regulation of public utilities. And the purpose of 4905-61 is to help give an incentive to utilities to obey the law.
Counsel, in Rice, Justice Cook wrote about this very issue, whether or not it's a penalty and whether or not it trips a 1 year versus a 6 year. And she concluded that punitive damages were available and that 6 year statute applied, and this court agreed, did it not?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think that you're not talking about a treble damages case.
Are we?
But it was punitive.
Well, and Your Honor, and I absolutely agree that the law of Ohio is
punitives are punishment.
The availability of punitive damages, the availability of punitive damages does not make a statute one for a penalty. There's lots of civil actions. Most civil actions, in fact, that tort actions, have at least the potentiality of punitive damages being awarded. That doesn't mean that they're all actions for penalties. The question is this statute one that's for a penalty? This one doesn't make it possible in the right circumstances when you've proven particular kinds of egregious wrongdoing to recover punitive damages in some unspecified amount. This statute requires that in every single case, however blameless or not the conduct, there will be a penalty equal to twice the size of the damage.
How long has this statute been on the books?
Long time, Your Honor.
All right. And isn't it not only possible but probable that the legislature, in looking at treble damages, wasn't just interested in deterring conduct, but interested in giving some incentive to the individuals injured to bring a case? In other words, here, if the issue is every gas company customer got cheated a little, their damages could be slight, and if treble damages isn't available, there's just not much incentive to bring the cause of action. And isn't that also part of the thought process as to where treble damages should be appropriate?
Your Honor?
The vacuum cleaner salesman who gives a bad deal to the customer. Small damages.
Your Honor?
And therefore, treble damages ought to be available.
The Ohio Public Utilities Commission has a series of procedures for people who think that they've been injured and just want to get recompense for their injuries caused by public utilities. There's a procedure for informal complaints. There's a procedure for formal complaints. The commission has a whole set of rules in effect that provide for refunds and for compensation for people in those situations. 4905-61 is something wholly different. It's not just one of these let's compensate injured consumers. And by the way, none of the plaintiffs in these cases are consumers. The plaintiffs in most cases that have been brought under 4905-61 are not consumers. Their businesses.
But it's a private cause of action, is it not?
It certainly is. But in doing so, they're doing it. The legislature has created this remedy to incentivize, just as you said, Your Honor, to incentivize people to help enforce the utilities laws and require public utilities to obey them. That's what treble damages statutes have traditionally been for, to help punish utilities and to incentivize people to come and act to enforce those laws against utilities. Compensation, while certainly a subsidiary purpose, is clearly not the main purpose. If compensation were the main purpose, it would be very easy to say you get your actual damages, and if the court thinks it's appropriate, the court may decide to penalize the utilities. That's what a punitive damages statute does. That's not what a treble damages statute does. It says no matter how blameless, innocent, or even accidental the violation by a public utility may be, treble damages are always awarded.
Here the commission found that the plaintiffs had been damaged.
No, Your Honor. In fact, these plaintiffs have never been to the commission. That's what makes this case just like Usternol.
Well, I mean that folks who want to purchase wholesale have been harmed.
The plaintiffs found, not that anyone had been harmed, they found that there were violations,
right,
and that the Cellnet company, not these plaintiffs, had proven that they had requested service, and they were therefore authorized to bring an action under 490561. These plaintiffs never went to the commission. These plaintiffs, just like the plaintiffs in Ustinol, are simply recruits who came in to try and find a windfall after they heard about earlier cases. That's why they missed the statute of limitations. That's why the Ustinol plaintiffs missed the statute of limitations, because they're just follow-on plaintiffs trying to seek a windfall after learning years later about what other people had done with the Public Utilities Commission. Every single case.
Well, now, if the utility did something wrong, what's the windfall if the wholesaler has, in fact, been damaged? And
Your Honor, treble damages is always a windfall.
But why shouldn't the case be allowed to go forward, at least for damages?
Your Honor, it shouldn't be allowed to go forward because the statute doesn't allow you to break the action into pieces. The statute says there's a unitary action. It's here to compel public utilities to follow the law, and that's why treble damages are available, and that's why it's an action for a penalty, and there's a one-year statute of limitations. Think how strange it would be, Your Honor, if this were a six-year statute of limitations. These lawsuits, which challenge actions going back as far as 1991, could still be sued on today as we stand here. If this is a six-year statute of limitations, Your Honors, the statute is still open as we sit here today for actions that happened 16 years ago.
You need to sum up, Mr. Wallach. You use more than 15 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. The law of Ohio is clear and has always been clear. Treble damages are designed to inflict a penalty in order to promote compliance with the law. This court has always called it a penalty. In the Ustinol case, which has stood on the books of Ohio for decades, the Court of Appeals found the same thing about 490561. This court should
use your time. Thank you. I'll leave 30 seconds for rebuttal. You obviously used all your time. Mr. Carchi.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Carla Tricarci. I represent Discount Cellular. I would like to reserve 7 minutes for my co-counsel. Defendant's only argument in this case is the law is per se a penalty because it imposes liability in excess of actual damages on a wrongdoer in favor of a person wronged. In fact, the law as enunciated by this court is exactly the opposite. Punitive damages do not make a statute a penalty because, quote, a law is not penal merely because it imposes an extraordinary remedy on a wrongdoer. That is the law decided by this court most recently, less than 2 years ago, in Rosette, which was a progression from Cosgrove, Rice, Floyd, and Pittsburgh, as cited in the Huntington versus Atrill case, which is the seminal U.S. Supreme Court case on the distinction between a remedial statute and a penal statute.
However, counsel, in Rosette, we were looking at an unadorned statement of damages. The statute said damages alone. It did not say penalty, forfeiture. It did not say treble damages. And wasn't that the issue in Rosette? Wasn't that the reason that there was a majority that ruled that it was a six-year statute and not a one-year statute? You had a significant dissent in that case that really talked about the context and the purpose of the statute, which it appears that you want us to just ignore.
Oh, to the contrary, Justice Lanziger, I think we don't want you to ignore that at all. As I read your dissent, you were concerned mostly that there was no causal relationship between the amount of damages, that is the $250, and the harm suffered. And that's true. However, in the Rosette case, that statute allowed $250 plus actual damages. So there had to be a relationship with respect to the actual damages. The rest of your dissent, as I read it, was the $250 gets added on regardless of what the actual damages are. Our statute is much clearer. There's a direct and proximate causal relationship. The language is the damages sustained in consequence of violation. Therefore, there's a direct and proportionate relationship between the damages. It is not, as the defendants would have you think, a mandatory tack on of treble damages. You have to prove, as Justice Pfeiffer said, you have to prove the actual damages. So in Rosette, if you had no damages, you would get $250. In our case, if you had no damages, then you would get no recovery. You wouldn't get a single recovery. You wouldn't get a double recovery. You wouldn't get a treble recovery.
And you don't think that a treble recovery is considered a penalty?
No, I don't think it's a penalty, because particularly in this statute. In this statute, you have to presume, as you said, as the court said in Rosette, as also the court said in Cosgrove and Rice, you have to presume that the legislature knew what was doing. That is the legislative function, to know what it's doing in choosing language. The two sentences clearly make a distinction between the word damages in the first sentence and penalty in the second sentence. And also, you have to look at the wrong that's being righted. This, the court in Rice, as Justice Cook indicated, that there can be dual purposes of legislation. There can be a social deterrent effect to try to deter negative conduct. But that is not the primary purpose when the wrong is to a private party and the damages are payable to a private party and not to the public, as a penalty would be. So in this case, the primary purpose is to compensate the aggrieved party. The money does not go to the state and doesn't go to the public.
But if the purpose of the General Assembly was to simply right the wrong to the individual, there would be no reason for treble damages, whether, again, applying Rice, the standard in Rice, why couldn't we reasonably conclude that the purpose of the General Assembly here was to deter public utilities from engaging in conduct such as this?
It is a purpose. I believe it is a purpose.
Why not the primary purpose?
Because if you look at the primary purpose test in Cosgrove, the three-pronged primary purpose test is, who is it, a private wrong or is it a public wrong? In this case, it was clearly a private wrong to that aggrieved party. Secondly, where does the money go? Where does the recovery go? The recovery does not go to the state, which would be an indicia of a penal statute. It goes to the aggrieved party. And third, it is not disproportionate because it's not a figure drawn out of the air. It is a figure that has to be proven by the plaintiffs, and then it's trebled if it's proven. So I think that, actually, I think Rice supports our position. Justice Cook said that there's not mutually exclusive. Just because you have a deterrent effect and a dual purpose of the statute doesn't mean that you can't have a private right. And in fact, they created a private right here and made the clear distinction in the statute. What the court said in Rosette is you have to look to the language, and the language is preeminent. We don't have legislative history in our state, so legislative history and the intent must be deemed from the language.
Counsel, do we have any case in which we have held the presence of statutory treble damages trips a one-year statute of limitations where there is not a specific statute provided?
No, I don't believe we have. I think the point is not for this court to determine the amount of damages. The amount of damages is the legislative role. So then the question is $1, does $1 constitute punitive damages? Does $1 million constitute punitive damages? That's not the role of this court. The role of this court is to say, what did the legislature say? What did the legislature mean? And what's the primary purpose of the statute?
Your strongest argument would be, I think, Mr. Carchi, if it didn't say treble damages, but just said damages.
Right.
Then we would say it could easily be remedial and subject to the 6-year statute. The difficulty I think members of the court are having is, we all agree it's a damage, but does the treble aspect make it such that it becomes punitive? That really is, and I think as Justice Pfeiffer vocalized his question, there isn't any case that says treble damages is decided one way or the other. And that's really what I think you have here. Isn't that where we are?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because I don't think you have to have treble. The issue is not whether the legislature put the words treble damage in. We're continuing to confuse.
But you could not recover other than treble damages, right?
But you have to prove them. Unlike in Rosette, you have to prove.
No, in any case, you can recover any kind of damage without proving something. You've got to be able to prove your claim.
In
so
Rosette?
We understand that.
Well, no, in Rosette, you could recover $250 without proving any damage. That's what that statute says. The failure to file a release of mortgage would trigger an automatic $250, regardless, and then you could get actual damage.
Does that mean that you think a recovery of treble damages in this case is remedial because you have to prove it?
Yes, it is remedial, and it is a private right of action.
And that's the reason you think it's remedial, because you have to prove it?
No, the reason I think it's remedial is because it goes to the aggrieved party, and it is a private.
You're looking at the recipient.
Correct.
When does it not go to a private party?
When it's a penalty that, or forfeiture that goes to the state.
But don't we let punitive damages go to private parties?
Yes, we do let punitive damages. We're confusing the concept of a penalty with punitive damages. Punitive damages are never a penalty. And to be honest with you, Your Honor, the legislature, as it did in the Consumer Sales Practices Act, could have put a statute of limitations here. Had they put a statute of limitations, the court wouldn't be left to speculate as to the proper. It could have been cured. It could still be cured.
Thank
you. Is it your position then that any time you have a private remedy, you don't have a penalty or forfeiture that triggers the 1 year? That all the private remedies, whether they have treble or punitive or assigned damages, are going to be subject to the 6 year? That's your position, is it not?
Well, if in the absence of the legislature having set a statute of limitations, then I think you have to look at the primary purpose of the statute.
But the rule on forfeitures and penalties being a 1 year does not make that delineation. You're asking us to read that into the 1 year requirement.
Does not make
that delineation between private and public. There's nowhere in the 1 year statute of limitations on penalties and forfeitures does it say only if it's against the public.
No, but by definition, penalties are payable to the state. Therefore, by definition, it's not a private right of action.
You're looking at penalty from the recipient. We are not looking at penalty from the person who has to pay it. They would probably disagree with you that it's not a penalty.
I'm looking at penalty as defined in the Cosgrove case. The Cosgrove case defines what a penalty is. And one of the indicia of penalty is that it is payable to the estate, to the state, and not
getting
to the
aggrieved
party.
Getting back to my position, you don't believe penalty ever applies to a private party action.
Not the word penalty. Punitive, but not penalty. I would like to yield to my co-counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Carchi. Mr. Griffin. You have about 4 minutes.
Thank you. I am Mark Griffin on behalf of Appalee Cleveland Mobile Radio Sales. I'd like to make 2 points and then address some of the issues raised already. The appellants want to reverse 2 cases because they recognize that they cannot prevail under either Rosette or Cosgrove. And page 3 of Ameritech's brief is very instructive. They first say they don't want Rosette because that's a plain language test, and because Rosette says clearly that the amount does not make a difference. They don't want Cosgrove because Cosgrove looks at the public injury versus the private injury, and it also says the amount does not make a difference. So they want a third test, which says that the amount does make a difference, and that what we should be looking at is the opposite of Rosette and Cosgrove and say the amount controls. This reverses the core holdings in these cases, but it also leaves this court with a very difficult dilemma. At what point does that amount go from being a damage to a penalty? Is it $150? Is it $151 that transforms from damage to penalty? Or what is the multiplier? If you have damage case.
Certainly my understanding of Rosette was that it was not related to the amount. It was the fact that it's so esoteric to prove damages from the fact that you're mortgage was not recorded, that the government was assigning a value to it, which we then considered as your actual damages, even though it was like a liquidated penalty thing. It had nothing to do with a penalty at all. So I don't see Rosette being very applicable. Why do you think it's applicable?
Well, because as I read Rosette, it says that we cannot rewrite 4905, we cannot rewrite a statute. We have to honor the words used by the legislature, and the legislature knows how to use the words penalty or forfeiture and did not do so in that case. And that's the exact situation we have here.
Yes, they use words treble, which is a whole lot different than liquidated damages.
And that gets to the amount confusion, which creates the confusion between punitives and penalties, because the Cosgrove test recognizes that those are not the same. And if you apply that language, and it's important because the appellants have never agreed that they're subject to Cosgrove, and they recognize that if you apply the public-private purpose test under Cosgrove, they cannot prevail. The only thing they can do is to say, well, if there are more damages that are punitive than there are compensatory, therefore we look at the amount and it must be a penalty. But the next thing you're going to get is a double damage action where it's equal. And then the court's going to be asked, well, is it 101%? Is it 102%? And what the jurisprudence of this court has said is, it's not the amount. It's the nature of the offense, or it's the language used by the statute. But if you decide to reverse or change those, you'll also be changing this court's doctrine on stare decisis. And as you know, there is a three-pronged test under Westfield and Gelatis that this court will not reverse cases unless, among other things, the prior decision defies practical workability. There's nothing impractical about the six-year statute or the tests under Rosette and Cosgrove. The second piece is there must be no hardship for those relying on past precedent. And here, my client's cases would be lost, so you'd have to reverse that as well. Let me say one last thing. A one-year statute from the time of the PUCO order means this, that people who lose at the commission have to file in common pleas court because there's an automatic right of appeal to this case, to this court, and a case will probably not be heard within that one-year period. So the result is that losers and winners are going to be filing cases in common pleas court. Losers will file frivolous cases. Winners will file cases that may subsequently be reversed by this court, and you'll have claim splitting. At the end of the day, the legislature chose to use the word damages. We should not rewrite that. They chose to link those words directly to the injury suffered, and they used penalties separately in that subject to create a private remedy for a private injury. The state does not even have standing under 4905-61 to bring a claim. It is solely a private remedy. Defendants want this court to rewrite 4905-61 and to ignore the distinction between punitive damages and penalties.
Do you see treble damages as an adjective modifying damages, or do you see treble damages as a concept by itself?
I see it as an adjective modifying the word damages. And the thrust of their argument is that we've been using treble damages wrong for the whole time, that it really should be treble penalties. And that's not the case. We see it as damages. It's to be compensatory. And I think that goes to the primary purpose, which is compensation.
You don't see it as a term of art in law that connotes a concept of an award to a party, a prevailing party.
I do not. I see damages as requiring an injury. I think the word damage implies an injury, and it requires an injury.
Counsel, when you talked about precedent, in French versus Dwiggins, we state a statute which imposes treble damages as a penalty for misconduct is obviously intended to prevent or discourage such activity, or in other words, to conform the public's conduct.
Yeah. Let me be very clear. We completely agree that there is an aspect of punitives, but we disagree that that is penalties. And what French and Dwiggins do is they don't look at the dual purpose. They never look at the dual purpose test. They don't apply the Cosgrove test. And instead, they're just asking, is there any element that is punitive? Not what the primary purpose is. They don't go through the Cosgrove analysis. And in fact, their reasoning there is called clear error by this court in Rosette and in Cosgrove, because it's the amount, the amount, the amount. It's not about the amount. It's the language of the statute, the language used by the legislature, and it's whether the wrong is a private wrong or a public wrong.
Counsel, has this court ever followed French?
Not to my knowledge. I don't think it's ever been followed.
Ever been cited?
Never been cited. But there are other cases have been cited numerous times to this court. Coqueline, Usternal, and others. And on each and every occasion, this court has rejected the same cases they bring here today, but asked for a different result.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin.
Thank you. I would ask this court to affirm the court below.
Thank you. Mr. Gassaway, 30 seconds.
Your Honor, may it please the court, Robert R. Gassaway for defendant Verizon Wireless. I'll try to make three brief points in my limited time. First of all, we're asking for the reversal of no cases. Rosette characterized the recovery as damages. Here, the word damages only appears as a step in the method for calculating the recovery. Second of all, Mr. Carchi is simply wrong when she tries to say that the word...
Well, how would you calculate the recovery other than by proving damages?
Well, for instance, there could be a fixed amount of damages, Your Honor, as there was...
But that's not here.
No, but that's correct, Your Honor. My point is, in the treble damages context, you're exactly right. You could not possibly calculate treble damages without first ascertaining damages. So therefore, the legislature needed to use the word damages to describe the calculation, not to describe what the overall recovery was or what the overall liability was, as they did in Rosette. They were virtually forced, as Justice Piper says, to use that word in describing the calculation. So that's the key distinction with Rosette. The second point that I'd like to make is just that Mr. Carchi is incorrect when she says that a penalty for purposes of statute of limitations purposes means a recovery by the state. Now remember, statutes of limitations do not apply to the state in Ohio. So when we're talking about 2305.11, the one thing that we know is that penalty must mean something with respect to private recoveries. It cannot simply mean a recovery to the state. And finally, if I could, I'd like to refer briefly to the Cosgrove test. They say that we're afraid of the Cosgrove test, that we can't win under the Cosgrove test. First of all, this court has never applied the Cosgrove test of Justice Resnick. That was a concurring opinion. It was a suggestion that wasn't accepted.
But it follows what she was articulating is the U.S. Supreme Court delineation of how you determine what's a penalty.
Well, there is,
and it's a rearticulation of that, is it not?
What she was trying to do was synthesize it, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And I would say, remember that principal opinion in the Cosgrove case took the position that you did not need that grand synthesis in order to answer the questions that were at issue there.
Well, I wrote that. I believe in easy in, easy out, quick and simple. And she thought that we should have articulated a broader definition to be of assistance in the future.
Well, you're
and five people agreed with her.
You're absolutely correct, Your Honor, and that's what I assumed what was going on, is she was trying to create a larger synthesis for the future. But the interesting thing is the future came, right? It came first in Rice, and then it came in Rosette. And neither in Rice nor in Rosette did they rely on that future, on that synthesis. And I think I know why. And it's because the Cosgrove concurrence.
Well, Justice Cook cited Cosgrove sparingly in Rice, did she not?
Liberally, I would say.
She cited Justice Resnick's concurrence several times.
That's correct, and that's the key distinction I'm making, is even though Justice Cook had her mind directly on that Cosgrove concurrence, she didn't march through the factors. What she did was she picked out those elements of the analysis that she agreed with, and she put them in, and she said, this is convincing. But no decision of this court has ever said, the synthesis is correct, let's march through it. And let me propose a reason why.
Very briefly,
the Cosgrove concurrence, the last two factors always go in opposite direction. The third factor boils down to whether there are automatic statutory damages, if you read carefully. The second factor is whether the recovery goes to an individual or the state. So if you're talking about a close case of a private recovery of automatic statutory damages, it all comes down to the first factor, what's the method and design. Here, treble damages is a penalty. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Gassaway. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.